Excited to welcome Canisius head coach Jim Christian to the basketball podcast. Coach Christian brings nearly 2 decades of NCAA Division I head coaching experience to Canisius with a proven track record of success across multiple programs. He owns over 300 career wins and is recognized as one of the most accomplished coaches in Mid-American Conference history, holding the league's highest winning percentage and earning MAC Coach of the Year honors twice. Christian led Kent State to 5 postseason appearances from 2002 to 2008, including 2 NCAA tournament berths and 3 NIT berths. He later guided Ohio University to a 49-22 record in 2 seasons, winning a regular season MAC title and earning NABC District Coach of the Year. At Boston College, he oversaw the program's most successful season in nearly a decade, highlighted by a win over number one Duke and a postseason return in 2017-2018. He also served as head coach at TCU and held assistant roles at Kent State, Pittsburgh, Miami, Western Kentucky, St. Francis. Most recently, Christian was part of Kent State's staff during back-to-back MAC championship game appearances and a 2023 NCAA tournament berth. Now at Canisius, Christian brings a wealth of experience, a commitment to player development, and a deep understanding of how to build winning cultures.
Hey, coach, a brief interruption of our podcast. You know, the best player development is coaching development. So let's work together to get your entire basketball organization or program unparalleled expertise and access to Basketball Immersion's group memberships. It's affordable, and your players will thank you. Contact us today, basketballimmersion.com, contact page, or DM us on X or Instagram. Get your coaches full access to our extensive coaching video library, detailed courses, and modern evidence-based coaching ideas. You can have proven coach development at your fingertips for all of your coaches. Elevate your coaches, elevate your teams, get started now. Basketball Immersion Group membership is where innovation meets excellence. Contact us today at basketballimmersion.com, contact page, or DM us on X or Instagram. Now back to the podcast.
Coach Christian, welcome to the basketball podcast.
Thank you, Chris. Pleasure to be on, man. I'm excited. I've seen a ton of these, and what an unbelievable job you do. And so just excited to be part of it.
Excited to have you finally. Of course, we have some common connections, and your name keeps coming up. So long overdue to have you on. But most importantly, you're back in coaching after 2 years off at Kent State there, coach. So what brought you back?
I think a lot of people think I'm probably crazy, but I just love coaching and teaching. I could do this type of stuff all day long. I love talking to coaches. I love being part of it. I love thinking about the game, putting things together. And I told my wife, if I was going to get back in, I'm going to take a real difficult job, which I did, and try to make the best of it, give them something they can remember. So it's been unbelievable. I've enjoyed every minute of it. Rob Senderoff's one of my best friends, and he calls me every day. He says it's a big head scratcher what the heck I'm doing every day, but I love it. I just a lifer in this. I just love coaching and teaching and being around it.
The game loves you too. Great to have you back as a head coach. And this is your mode of operations a little bit, is to take some difficult jobs. And you've certainly done that over the last kind of few coaching jobs that you've taken. Maybe talk to us about that a little bit and help the audience understand some of the challenges in taking some of these difficult jobs.
I think as a young coach, I think I knew that I was probably not going to get an opportunity as a head coach unless I took some challenging situations. Obviously, I started off in a great situation at Kent State following Gary Waters and Stan Heath, and such a great program, and it's such a great program even now. And the pride I take at being part of that and seeing where it grows with Rob Senderoff and all the former players we have had that are coaching now. I think there's probably 10 or 11 of them that Division I coaches from that one program. It's crazy. But then, and then just, you just make career decisions. You connect with people and just say, man, I know this is going to be tough, but you want to just challenge yourself, and it doesn't always work, but there's always moments in there where, hey man, we're getting this. And it's always pivotal things that turn it around and just makes you think about the game differently and how you got to approach it if you're overmatched, if they have better talent than you. When I was at Boston College, it was like a tough one every night. You know what I mean? Okay, how are we gonna stay in this game? And it just your game just evolves, and you have good people around you. And I was fortunate as Billy Wazinski, who was with me 14 years at four different schools. And so it's, when you have people like that, the days are better, because people like that never have a bad day.
And he's made my life better in so many ways too. We've had some great conversations over the years, and I feel very connected to you because of him. And this is cool, coach. When I suggested this, you suggested, hey, why don't I do some video? And it connected with you a little bit because the TJ Saint podcast obviously connected with you, and you just thought a little bit easier to be able to talk through Canisius basketball and your philosophy.
Yeah, I thought it was easier to do it this way because this is how to our team. So at our level, I have 11 new players every year. So it's good and bad. Like, it's really good because, okay, we get to kind of reinvent ourselves, think about what we did, think about how we want to teach this, take our things and go through. And so I started with this, okay, what's in the DNA of our, and I'm just talking about offense. We have offensive one and defensive one, but in our offensive one, what I mean by DNA is these are the things, irregardless of what we run, irregardless of what style we play, these things have to be incremental into what we do. So it's got to incorporate everything that we do. And I'll go through them real fast. They're not complicated things. Everybody's probably got their version of it. So for us, it's okay. And I got this from TJ saying, and again, I've been doing this for 21 years as a head coach, and I love stealing great things, especially from great coaches at all levels, especially the NBA because of the terminology. They don't have a lot of the stuff that we do every day. So they're thinking about simple terminologies, things to get effective. So I took his 0.5 decisions, right? Everybody's got a version of it. I just like that 0.5 decisions. And what are you doing on those 0.5 decisions? Just like he said, so we took SGS. It's shoot, go, swing. And it's got to be in everything that we do. It doesn't make a difference what we run, but it has to do with doing that. And then obviously decisions that we make out of the point. So that was the first thing. The second thing was explaining to our players the importance of rim pressure. Okay. The difference between in the NBA, points in the paint, when the balls hit the paint, the points per possession is 1.24. These are the best players in the world. The points per possession, when it doesn't, is 1.01. Get our players to understand that, okay, we want 65% of our offensive possessions to get a paint touch. 65% of them, whether it be transition, I'm not putting in anything for our personnel that doesn't have a layup aspect to it, or somebody, or a drive aspect in space that we can get the ball to the front of the rim. Okay, so that was two. And then third was offensive rebounding. And I used Illinois with our team. You'll see the clips here in a minute. Because Illinois shot 31% last year from three. And they were, I think, probably 300, maybe around that number, but rebounded 43% of their missed threes. And I wanted to give our guys a formula for that. And I'm going to go through the things here so you can see it. So what I did was when I broke it down to our team, this is our SGS. And when I broke it down to our team, I didn't use NBA players. I used G League players because I wanted the point to our players to be, these are guys who are hungry to play in the NBA. You guys should be hungry to play. The guys who I'm, if I show you NBA guys, they already know that. They're already in the NBA. These are guys who are ridiculously good college players, but now they're hungry to get in the NBA. If they can't play this way, they can't play in the NBA. Their dream ends. And for our guys, whether they're young guys and they want to play at a high level and make NIL money, or whether they're older fifth-year guys and they want to play in the G League or overseas, this has to be part of the way they approach the game. If you can't make decisions. In this case, it was quick shot ready, shoot the ball. You can't play. And then I would show our team from the summer, same situation, not making the play. Now, this is summer ball. We didn't have much practice, but I wanted to make the point. Look, you're competing with those guys. Your decision process is competing with those guys, right? Young man doesn't shoot it.
Is that something you showed your team, coach? Those two
This
different
is
clips?
the exact presentation I showed my team.
Okay.
I explained our DNA. This is the first day. I explained our DNA. I showed us, and I use the summer as a huge evaluation tool. So I'm evaluating what you can do. So before I formulate what we run, I want to see who on my team, and I categorize them probably in two categories, right? There are some guys that they can create their own advantage. I just got to put them creatively in space where they can use the things that they do better than most naturally. But then there's some guys you've got to create advantage for them, and you need both. So I'm thinking about all of that as I put our stuff in.
And just to narrate it a little bit, if you're listening to the podcast, Coach showed a clip of a player in the G League catching it and playing in 0.5, and one of his players catching it and
And not,
pausing, not playing in 0.5.
and I've shrunk it. There was a lot of them. It was probably two G League, the five of us, because it was the summer. And then obviously the second one is catch and goes. It was just catch and goes. A lot of guys use the term stampede, catch and go on the break. And then I would try to find our practice, same situation. The guy in the same, we play opposite, just like you love to do, just like we love to do. And he's not attacking. He's not
And go
attacking.
back to that one, coach, if you don't mind, because that's such a key part that I find I've been fighting the good fight, hopefully, but with kind of trainer culture and players learning all these moves, the
Right.
one move they really need to learn is the ability to be able to attack space in straight lines, right? And this
Catch and
is
go.
this example
Catch
totally.
and go. We're doing everything we want here. This is an early opposite pass to the most athletic guy on our team, and he's putting the ball straight down, not going anywhere. So again, it's all the stuff that we want to do. So I'm showing them that. And I think kids like to see that. They like to see, okay, I got to do this. I got to make that. He holds it back. He's pulling it back out, which is what we don't want to do when we have an advantage situation.
Can you reference just for us, how do you play pickup in the summer with them then, in terms of these examples we're seeing?
Yeah, these are more like we get these summer practices. So it'll be like organized pickup. I'll put them in some situations or drill with an advantage or something like that where they have to do all this. And I could just see, okay, what type of field do we have as a group? And then really, I really want to know their skill set. So a lot of individual skill work, a lot of stuff. Because a lot of times when you're evaluating guys and they're on roster A, they may not be able to show you what they can do because their role might be a little bit different. And kids would come down our level, they want a different role, and I got to see what they can do. And
Love
then
it.
I and so for 21 years, whatever we've run is if you went back 21 years, you're not going to see much of the same stuff because our rosters aren't the same. And I don't want, hey, this is the way Jim Christian's teams, this is what they always run. If you're going to try to scout us this year, it's not going to help you to look at what we ran last year. It could, but some stuff will be in, but not. This is the second one, right? This is the quick swings and attack. It's quick swings and attack. 0.5 seconds. Here's us. Right? He doesn't quick swing it. We have a 2-on-1. We don't quick swing it. So I just wanted them to see that. And so what you'll find is after watching it, we go out there and do some of the drill work or stuff that we do. They get better at it. They get better at it because they know, okay, this is everybody. This is a DNA thing. Everybody's going to have to do it. And this is another TJ Singh. I feel like I'm stealing all his stuff, so I apologize to him, but he should take it as a very
Hey,
a more of
he
a
loves
compliment.
it. Yeah, don't worry, coach. He loves it. He's
Compliment because
grateful
I
and
like the way he explained it. So
yeah.
it's all stuff that we've talked about, but we might have not used his terms. So these are our high paint decisions again, because we good players can make decisions in space and they make them early. That was a guy drawing two. Here's our guy drawing two. Trust me, I'm picking the worst versions from our team. I'm picking the worst clips.
Coach, I appreciate that. This is awesome. I love seeing this in these examples. And this clip here, I particularly want to highlight this idea of the high paint versus low paint decision. Because again, and I've said talked about this a number of times on the past few podcasts, the development of players with this understanding at the youth level is one of the most important things we can do. And it simply is not being taught. And these two clips show it so well. So I want coaches to be able to come back to this, reference, clip these clips out. I'll share them on Twitter. But this is exactly what we're talking about. He gets too deep and he doesn't have an opportunity to be able to make a play. They drive until they're trapped instead of that high paint decision, don't they, coach?
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the, and again, this is so we do a lot of film work. So every day after practice, we film everything we do, every individual instruction, every practice, and they will get 4 or 5 clips from me every night. And a lot of them in the beginning are all decision clips, are all decision clips. And then because it's a byproduct of, again, it's got to be in anything that we do. It doesn't make a difference what you run if the guy who's in that position can't make the right play. And look, it's like everybody else. It's all I also show them the great ones. It's a balance. You need to learn from the bad ones and you need to show the best ones. And you can see here, great driver, but he just goes too deep and he's trying to split three guys, low paint decision, as you called. And so now here's the rim pressure deals that we talk about. So, like this, the stat that I already put up there, the 1.24 points in the paint. This is an area, this came a lot of it from, we were just bad at this last year. We just didn't have, we just were bad at the roster makeup for this. So I wanted all our team to understand the importance of us getting the ball in the paint, making the right plays on every possession. So this is a simple twist ball screen, which we do a lot of. And the guy just understands angles and how to finish inside off the paint. He just is aggressive. This is us coming off a twist ball, not a twist ball screen, but a get for us, which is a rescreen. He has a clear path to the basket right there to get to the rim. And he makes a nice play. Because we pop behind it and we play backwards, which is a good play, good quick swing. But I want our mentality to be, let's get the ball to the paint. Let's get the ball to the paint.
So in that example, the player should have been confrontational, to use another TJ
He'd been
Say phrase,
confrontational. That's right. He should have been
to drive through them
confrontational.
and not around
Nobody
them.
had stopped him.
Yeah.
He should have gone through him, and that should have probably been a 3-point play opportunity, not a quick swing three.
Coach, this is another key part. I have no doubt you have to teach this a lot to them, is like the difference between being selfish and unselfish. And actually shooting it versus two, shooting it versus three, or driving deep is selfish. But scoring versus one is not
So
selfish.
I think we use the term a lot as coaches of, hey, this guy really knows how to play. I'm not sure if we actually explain to the player what that actually means.
We
What
don't.
does a guy that know how to play mean? Well, you really know how to play. To me, knowing how to play is the things that we just talked about. Knowing to make quick decisions and they're right. Making understanding to be a play ahead of what the defense is doing. And I want our guys to understand, like, I want people to say when they go to the next stop, wherever that next stop is, that people are saying, hey, you really know how to play. And it's not, well, we ran good plays. It's no, they knew how to play out of what we're doing because that's the game. At some level, if you can't do those things, your career ends. At some level, on whatever level it is, whether it be high school, whether it be college, whether it be trying to be a professional basketball player overseas or wherever, if you can't play like that with other guys, your career is over. And I think that's the message, the messaging that goes with it, because that's how I view my job. I view my job as to, I'm trying to make them pros in whatever level they could be a pro. But by doing that, we'll all get better. But we have to play the right way because that's what they're being judged on, not the points per game or rebounds per game or all that. So then the last part of it, and again, this is was talking about Illinois in term that we use as the, are these 2 second wars. And I'll show you what I'm talking about. And I love the way they approach it at Illinois. I think he's obviously a phenomenal coach, but the way they approach it to me without having a conversation is the war would be right now. The war would be right now. When the ball is in the air, who stops playing and who is really competing? And then we want to identify with our team, where are we crashing from? I've never believed we're going to crash from 2, 3, 4, and 5. I'm going to live on offense when we shoot a three, that 70% of the balls are going to be missed to the middle of the floor or the weak side. So I don't really care what number you are. If you're located in those spots, you're crashing. If you're on the strong side, if the ball's shot from that slot, and number 22 here, he would be our safety because you're least likely to get that rebound from the strong side corner. Least likely. Most likely, weak side corner, middle, or weak side slot or top. And you can see this 2 second war, Illinois is winning all of these battles. They're winning all of these battles. And I want our guys to do that. So then, again, I showed us from the summer we have a 3-point shot. We have two crashers on the weak side, and one is signaling three for his teammate. We don't need signaling three. We need you to crash. And so it's just, again, these are summer clips, right? So this is the beginning of it.
Keep it here, coach. Let's talk about then what would be the ideal situation right now in terms of your floor balance, your transition
Right. So
defense, and your
right
offense
now
rebound.
we're a little bit unbalanced. But the lower guy would go get it. The deepest corner guy would be getting back. And these two guys would be all out crashers. And I'm going to show you a drill that we do that'll explain it a little bit better to everybody because that'll be the next part of this is that the way we do it. Okay, so we have these philosophies, these DNA things. And now I wanted our drills. When we started in the second day of class, we started our little small groups. The only drills I wanted to do emphasize our offensive DNA. So if the drill had nothing to do with one of those three things, what am I doing it for? I want them to fully get this. And these are the drills that'll emphasize it. Some of them are yours, some of the stuff I've seen from other people, but we will do a lot of these 3-on-2 decisions, right? So I don't want to just do shooting drills. I want shooting drills off decision. So we'll have two defenders, coaches, managers. We don't have a lot of staff here, so everybody has to help out. And we'll drive it and make a high paint decision, and then we'll have to make a second decision. So we'll have the defensive guys bluff at the guy and go back to the corner sometimes. Sometimes he'll come fully rotate and you got to make the one more and you have to read the play. And we'll do a million of these. Off any action that we run, there's going to be a decision.
Coach, this is awesome. It's the best way to stimulate decisions. It's the best way to develop passing, obviously, dribble drive decisions, all the different things that come with what you're emphasizing here. Now, just frame it for us. There's two managers or
So we
coaches
have
on defense.
defensive guys would be the guy guarding the ball and then and one walk-on who's going to play. Either one, he can sometimes bluff and play the corner guy. So that means you better be ready to shoot and shoot it. Or he's going to come fully rotating, get the wing, the high slot, and now you got to make the one more.
And then the
So split
constraint to
up.
start with is they must drive and kick off the high.
Must drive right. There's usually a third defender. You go by him, must drive, and then the gap defender would come get you, and then you read the play. And we do a ton of them. I just put a couple on here. This is just middle drive, one more. If he does it. And it's a great way to get shots, game decisions. We'll do it off the go screen. Everybody. So we'll go to both ends. And I don't care what position you play, we're going to go screen into a decision. Go screen into a decision. And so we can see the go screen coming right here. That's our center. And here comes the same play read, right? And then the shots we take are shot ready game shots.
This is not scripted, coaches. It depends
Not
on the
scripted.
read of the defender,
Not scripted.
what the
You're
defender
reading.
does, where the
You're
advantage
reading
is.
the defense. The
Yeah.
defense sometimes can. The defense will sometimes come, sometimes not come. You're reading it. Sometimes you drive it. Like whatever it is, we're reading the defense.
And if you go back to that for 1 second, coach, so we can talk about it a little bit more, because I want to
Yep.
talk about the beauty of what you've figured out with this drill when you've adopted and adapted it. And that is the fact that it doesn't need to be run from the same spots the same way every time. Different
Right.
actions can trigger, different things can happen, and different spacing needs to always happen.
Different actions. And if we're putting a play in or an action that particular day, we will do both ends. We're going to do decisions. We're out of that play, whatever they might be. Whatever that might be. If it's a play, we're getting a guy in space. What decision is he making? Is he playing backwards? Is he playing forwards? What's the defense telling you? So, the ball is telling you to do something. Are you reading the play? What is the ball telling you to do? Offensively, especially. And
I
here it
love
is.
it, coach. And
There's
this is the
the ghost.
foundation. You have
He's
so much
here.
of this
Teach the
development.
play. One more. And again, the shot is more of a game shot. Is more of a game shot. I told you we run a lot of, we'll run some twist ball screen action. So we will break this down a couple different ways. This is a big read, right? Got to land on two. Where's your read? Feel pressure, kick corner. Or sometimes there's no pressure, pogo layup. We don't ever let them dunk it. You never dunk, you get in the game. So it's either pogo layup or kick corner off the twist. But we're also working on the screening angle, the timing of the screen. So we'll guard the guard. So we're just working on screening his hip pocket. We call it hot stove. I've heard that might be a TJ too, where you hot stove it into the window. And then we will change the coverages. Are they switching? We're going to play what we do off the switch. Are they up to touch and trapping? Now you're slipping into the window. So there's a bunch of different things, but all of them require decisions. All of them require decisions. So we're constantly doing these are warm-up drills for us, right? These are warm-ups.
One more question about that, coach, is literally because you task simplify it, instead of running the actions 3-on-0, you just add two defenders. There's still an
And two defenders.
advantage, and they still get to run the action clean that you want them to develop.
And sometimes, so if it's a four-man action, we'll go four versus three.
Sure.
Sometimes we'll put, if it's a five-man action, we may have, if the point guard is a heavy decision in that guy, point guard unguarded. So he has to see what's going on out here, where he's not worried about the pressure. And then we'll play five. It's a build-up, right? So we'll do, for me, it would be put the action in, create the decision. And then I like incorporating everybody. So if it's an action, we may play 5-on-5-on-5 with three teams. So everybody's playing. I don't have five guys sitting on the side.
I personally have never understood that either, coach, but I get that a lot of teams do that at the college level and above. But for me, for development coaches, we should always have everyone involved because
I
as
just think
coach referred to, you never know.
reps help. You want everybody in your program to get better. I think reps help. So it's our crash drill with balance, and I'll show it to you. I'll see everything, and you'll see everything I'm talking about. It starts with an offensive rebound, a contested offensive rebound. We want him to free his hands. Good offensive rebound is free their hands first and then locate the ball. You watch so many guys, their hands stay down, they can't rebound it. And then he will kick the ball out. And then from here, we're going to be working on spacing concepts. So right now we're working on our spacing concepts. Okay, so this one is his baseline drive. He's punching middle because he's opposite, right? So we have the corner filled, and then we want to work on the one more quick shot. So now it becomes a rebounding drill. So in this drill, and if I keep going, you're going to see it in a second. The yellows are our crashers, and the red is our safety. Our safety gets back to the logo, and our crashers, hands high, go crash. So we know when we're shooting this slot three that we have weak side crasher, baseline crasher, and our five man will wedge and try to get to that middle. So we want those three spots, and you got to locate the basketball. We're not just running in, we're trying to rebound with a purpose. And this is the one area that I needed our team to get better at. So this is one of the ways that we do it.
Again, you create a situation for them to play out of, is what you referenced before, and then you let
So
them play
then,
out of it.
exactly. And then our offensive rebounding is this. If I offensive rebound the ball and my shoulders are facing the rim, I can score. If my shoulders are facing everywhere else, everybody already spreads that anyway. We yell money, and it's best time to shoot threes. We will spray it to threes, and that's when we would hopefully spray it out one more three and recrash. And that's what we do. So I'll show you another spot because this is a different one. So this is another different spacing one. It's all in the same drill. Kick, we swing. Okay. Strong side kick, we swing it again. And now we're going to get the baseline drive post strong. We domino and 45 cut. Right, that's a concept for us. Our five man never goes up the lane. He runs behind the ball and either plays the next or he shoots it. And then watch. So now, if the shot's from dead top of the key, right? So we talked about the slot in the corner. So now, what happens when we shoot the ball from the dead top of the key? We're not sure what's the weak side or strong side. So we're sending all four. We're sending all four, and the shooter would get back. And the shooter would get back, and we better get it. And again, who is on our team is going to be the guy. Sometimes your best rebounder, I had Kai Bowman at Boston College, who averaged 7 rebounds a game from the point guard spot. And that's what we wanted. So that will lead us to, and again, this is all implementation in the beginning. So I want to incorporate everything. So to me, this 5 versus 4 continuous. So three teams of five, right? Four guys on defense. You can only, one guy's on the side. He'll come in once you get on defense. And we're playing 5 versus 4 continuous, running our lanes because we want to run. Running our lanes, making quick decisions. 5 versus 4, we better know who we should be crashing like crazy, and we should be getting the shots that we want. We should be teaching them the 7 second plays. I think a lot of teams play 5 on 4, but they play it in the half court. And I just think it's a great drill to play continuously. So we'll play with score, 5 versus 4, 5 versus 4, 5 versus 4, three teams.
Can you describe the rotation for people that aren't watching, Coach?
In this particular case, red was on offense, blue is on defense. Whether they make or miss, blue is now pushing it down the other end. You'll see it here in a second. Blue is now pushing it at the shirts. This is summer, so we don't have practice jerseys yet, so we're going pennies. And so we got red pennies, blue pennies, and shirts. So they're running their lanes. They're coming out 5 on 4. If it's a made basket, we have set lanes. If it's a missed basket, we compete for lanes. We compete for lanes. There's no, we don't push through and we're getting down. And I'll talk about that a little bit. But our five is rim running. Our five is putting pressure on the rim. And then we got to make decisions. We got to make quick. Where's the 2 on 1? Where's the 3 on 2? In this case, I would have pointed out our five man's not posting, so it's easy for us to for them to guard us, right? But we make plays out of it, and that's how we do it. Then they would get the rebound. Shirts are coming at red. One of the blues gets off, so there's only four defenders. They're in the paint. Sometimes we'll circle them up, whatever. And then so it's not. And then they're coming. 5 on 4 against red.
Where
Then.
does the plus one offensive player come from?
So for us, if it's a two man, he's going to run the right corner. So he would be on the right side. Five man could be on either slot high. Three man would be left, and the four man would be on the baseline because if it goes in, he's taking it out. So I want to work on that.
No, I'm
I want
talking more even specifically, Coach, just about the drill. So you have four defenders and there's a plus one out of bounds. How do you
Right.
designate who's out of bounds? How do you designate where they're coming in from, et cetera?
I have three coaches that coach each team. They just alternate who's out.
Okay.
They'll just alternate who's out, and then they'll tell him to go accordingly. So if you're a two man, get out on the right slot because you're gonna. If that ball goes in, we want you flying down to the right corner on a made basket.
Love it.
Three man, you'd be on the left, so we want you running to the left corner. And the four man, we need you to get the ball out of bounds as quick as you can. We put him in the corner sometimes, or we'll put him under the basket. You got to get the ball in and out of bounds as quick as you can get it. And our five man, he can go either. We have a volleyball line there and just run straight to the rim. So everybody's running their lanes. But if it's a missed shot, we're just competing for lanes. Now you got to get floor balanced. And then it's continuous. And it's continuous. And I will play for 10, 15 minutes before we stop it. We'll keep score on it. And then we know how we're playing. And then I just think it's a lot of good live film. Who's crashing? Who should have got back? Are we making good reads? I think we're going to get it all here. And I think you're forced to make decisions and simple ones. And I think it's probably the most. In a college basketball game, the most advantage you're going to have is 5 on 4. Somebody drives, misses, and falls down. It's probably a 5 on 4 back. It's not going to, very, you're not going to get as many 3 on 2s or 2 on 1. Those are steal plays, but you're going to get a lot of 5 on 4s. Guys get tangled up, guys get knocked to the floor for whatever reason. You're going to get some of that. And I want us to make good possessions out of that. That's why I want to do this one
I
continuous.
love that, Coach. That point is so important. I feel like we spend an obsessive amount of time on 2-on-1 advantages, 3-on-2 advantages, but the game doesn't unfold that way most of the time. It's more these situations where you have that temporary 5-on-4 advantage. Hey, Coach, a brief timeout from the podcast to bring you the Analytics Minute, sponsored by Hoopsalytics. How do you decide who your biggest impact players are? Traditional stats don't tell the whole story, which is why high-level pro and college teams rely on analytic systems like Hoopsalytics to make data-driven lineup decisions. Examining team stats when a player is on the floor tells a more compelling story, For example, you can use net points per possession to determine your best two-way players, as well as your offensive and defensive stars. Or use the team rebounding percentage for each player to see who has the biggest impact on rebounding. The results may surprise you. Hoopsalytics brings the most powerful analytics to teams of all levels. It's easy to use and affordable. It's like AI for basketball coaches. Discover how Hoopsalytics can help you make better data-driven coaching decisions. Visit hoopsalytics.com/ball. That's hoopsalytics.com/ball today to learn more and start analyzing your games for free. Talk to us a little bit. Okay, so they're playing with the advantage. They're trying to seek the advantage. Are you giving them ever any type of constraints or any types of musts on offense where they must run a certain action before they score? Or is it just live play, seek and find the advantage?
That's a great question. And it leads me right to the next thing we're doing. So
perfect.
Okay, so these are the DNA, the decisions, all part of this. And now it's, okay, what do we consider good plays? Okay, our offense, right? If we get a clean rebound, that's a big out and he outlets it quick. A guard rebound, a two-handed guard rebound, okay, or a steal. We're not looking to run any action. We're looking to make seven-second plays. But, okay, what do we consider a good seven-second play? And here's a lot of things. I think a lot of guys, a lot of teams believe in that philosophy. We want to score in 7 seconds. And what we try to do is put drills in that show our players plays that we think are great plays for 7 seconds. And I'm going to show you that here in a minute. So we do a lot of these as early warm-ups. So for example, one of the things that we like, and I know you love this concept, is early opposite one more, right? We call it early opposite. Everybody calls it playing the weak side of the floor. So we will do a four-man, basically fast break drill to one side, and then watch what happens on the way back. So we're kicking the ball up ahead. That's a quick early kick ahead layup. Our five man always starts in the middle right here. His job is to run and take it out. We have two cones on that side of the floor. So after he lays it in, the guy who cut through first, he's bottom cone. The guy who throws it, he's top cone. Our five man takes it out, and now we're off to the races weak side. So going down, it's always a kick ahead layup, get loose. One pass, kick ahead layup. Coming back, we're going to do a bunch of different things. I think you could teach anything you want transition out of this drill. So for us, I don't care who's leading the break. All four lines are interchangeable, except for the post line, right? We are now going to start attacking. We want to cross the court and get this ball opposited, and that's a one more shot. And now we have crasher. Because we would love that. I would love that play in transition. Clean rebound, get it out, weak side floor, one more three from that corner. I feel like that's a high percentage three. I also feel like it's an easy three to rebound. So that's absolutely something we would love in 7 seconds. We would love that play. So we're going to constantly do it. And then again, next group would be right after them, four man, and everybody's changing lines. So because everybody needs to, I don't know who's clean rebounding it. It could be anybody. One, two, three, four. We don't outlet the ball with the four. The only guy that outlets in our team is the five. So that's one thing we do. And I'm just going to show. So now the second thing we would love, if the ball is kicked strong side, up ahead, the only way you'd kick it strong side is if you're telling that guy to attack the basket. I'm trying to play the weak side, trying to cross the court, trying to get the ball reversed. If I'm throwing it up the strong side, we're trying to attack the rim. So our five man would stop his run and break off behind it or stop completely, and we would 45 cut the weak side trail. Does that make sense? And you'll see that one here. So this is the next drill. So here it is. We kick. We got our one pass ahead layup. It's always the same going down. Our two cones are there. We're touching the cones. But now the bottom cone, okay, after he lays it in, the bottom cone is now getting this outlet. And we're going to play strong side. We have a coach set up down the other end of the floor in the deep corner. So the guy running the top lane in the yellow penny right here, there's a guy ahead of him, so he would run the high slot. Does that make sense? Because we're competing for lanes. So we're imagining that he's there. So then that ball's kicked up strong side. You're telling him to attack. And we would put coaches out here now for this. So, right, that ball's going to go. He drives. Here comes the rotation. And now we're reading this guy, our other coach. Which way is he going? Is he going to the corner? We're going to get this 45 cut. We're imagining our five man would have broke off, right, or stopped his run. And now we teach baseline drive, Jump, stop, and pivot. Don't leave your feet. It's not a play you make on the run. It's not going to happen. You have to jump, stop, and let the play develop. This is something we've been working a lot on, and see who you have. Because sometimes these guys try to make this play too fast, and they don't see that giant window that kid sees right there. We lay it in, and that's continuous too. And then next group would go, next group would go. So it's just one right after the other, and we have people over there. So it's a fast break decision drill as a warm up.
The theme that I get from watching these is obviously time on task, active learning time. You're trying to maximize the learn by doing aspect of the practice. And then these transitions back and forth help you do that rather than waiting for a team to get back and these different things. And I just love this, coach. This is such a great example of
Mindset.
maximizing your players.
So then there's also times your five man gets the rebound, right? So what are we doing when it's five trail? We yell five trail. A lot of teams will do things. This is one action that we run five trails. Again, it's the same thing always going down. Okay, we have a guy throwing it off the backboard, one of our freshmen. And then now it's five trail coming back, right? So we cross the court. We can't kick it early, so we check cut that. Our top guy would check cut it, open up a driving space for him while our five's trailing. We kick it ahead, and now we hit five in the trail. And this is one of our actions. We will quick swing it, and then we elbow pin for the top guy, and then we'll play rescreen out of that. And then we'll put defense down here too. We'll have a defense on these two guys, and we'll see if sometimes this guy will come take the roll. You got to skip it, right? Sometimes he won't, and you got to make these reads. So it's just quick action that we do, and it's a one all together. It takes us about 6 minutes. So we'll go 2 minutes, 2 minutes, 2 minutes. Everybody's going, everybody's going. And it's a great way to get their minds thinking about. So the drill gets back to our style of play. If I want to make 7 second plays and I want to have a pretty good chance of scoring, I got to show them or tell them, what do we want? We don't want you just barreling down there and throwing the ball up. We want you to make decisions and plays out of that. So that's the beginning of it. So then here's the other thing we start going over. This is all summer. So other stuff we start going over is, okay, there are rebounds that are either contested or delayed, poked away. You're not going to score in 7 seconds now, but I still want to play with pace. Okay, so what do we want to do? Now the mindset to me changes. Now, if it's a delayed break, I don't want to pull it out and run a play. On a missed shot, on a made shot, I probably would. On a miss shot, I want them to guard something. I want to put them in something that our players understand and our reads can be practiced, but we want to put them in some decisions. And it's nothing dramatic. It's just, okay, we're going to get to it quickly and we're going to make them guard something. So one of them will be the twist ball screen, and we like to play out of three flat. So, of course, the roster of our team. I've never done this before, but so now we don't have it. It's a slow break. We got twist ball screen coming, and we bury under the rim. So we want to be three flat on the baseline here. I want this defender guarding the twist ball screen guy. What is where? I don't want him to tell us we're going to push you left into a high slot. There is no slot. I want the ball screener to be able to, hey, they're trying to push me. I could just go downhill. It's kind of got a Gonzaga thing when Timmy was there. It's a huge SEC thing. I think they all run it, the SEC. But in transition, if I can get post play, it could be our guards down there. Like for us, it could be our three men. And if we have a five man that can shoot, it really presents some problems. So
And
this
the
twist,
advantage of this, coach, is it creates more space, especially in the slots and the lanes, right?
more space. We want our screen out high so we can read the defensive coverage and we have space to make plays. And again, we have rim pressure. We have rim pressure. Our guy under the rim under there who's behind him is ducking in and playing. And
I was
we're
going to
trying to get
say
him.
that duck in, let's talk about that because I see it on the video. Coaches, the player at the rim is not just staying in the dunker, they're ducking in as well. And the
Ducking in.
duck in seal on that creates more space. It's almost like a Gortat screen action, right? Where they seal and
Exactly.
maintain space.
And again, it could be for us, it could be a two man, it could be a three man, because we have a more, our guards are more physical this year. Could be the one. It could be because it doesn't make a difference for us. We just want to, like you said, create space in transition.
And it's not about that player getting the ball necessarily. They're actually screening off the help from being able to help as well.
And he will get it. And sometimes he will get it. That guy goes to tag, you will get it. And so then it just gives us a little space. And then we would, that's our, that, then we would respace out of it. There's spacing, initial spacing, and then there's respacing. We would respace out of it. This is something we do. Then we like to play a lot out of ghosts or blurs and get our guards in the post. Okay. So right now he doesn't have a break. So now we need to cross the court right now. I want to cross the court. If I don't have early, I don't have opposite, I need the ball on the other side of the court. So he would yell ghost, and then we would ghost the second one and domino out this big. Domino him out. He should be under the rim to start and domino out. That's the first part, is the big staying and helping on the guard post. We could play the five, we could play these weak side, and then we have this weak side action going on at the same time. So we're curl cutting and wrapping and then pinning with the guard in the post.
Is it an automatic when they cross the court that this ghost action is going to get stimulated?
I give the point guards control to call. Whoever gets the rebound is calling it out. We're either
Okay.
calling whatever one of the actions. We have a bunch, we have a few of them, but if he's yelling ghost, we all know what we're doing. And you could be in any one of these four spots. Because we're if it's a missed shot, we're competing for lanes. On a made shot, we probably would run something. But on a missed shot, you're getting it, you're crossing the court, you're yelling ghost, and we're playing. And then we'll play games out of that three-man high stuff. We can post out of that. The guard can post all that's going on. We have a weak side skip going on. There's a lot of different things. And it's just quick movement in transition. I wanted to have, okay, I want them to guard something, but I want it to be quick and I want it to be interchangeable. So that could be our four man who grabs the rebound and we don't have a, it's a delayed break. And okay, what is he going to do? A lot of teams, they're running over to the one and then they have no, now they're playing just straight half court, which is fine. There's a million ways to play. I want to be able to play with a little bit more pace, irregardless of who has the ball, because I want so much time spent on their decision processes, their understanding of what we're doing. And I want us to be a little bit more interchangeable, especially at our level.
So it's not point guard dominated.
It's not
It's
point guard dominated.
all players are empowered and involved to be able to make decisions and to be able to take
Right.
advantage of advantage.
So I will tell you this, if you have a really good rebounding point guard, because he's the free rebounder, right? Most teams send the point guard back. So he is the free rebounder. So you will play as fast as you want to rebound. I said, Kai Bowman, that was it. He would get seven of them. He knew, okay, I want to push this ball. I need to go get it. So again, we were of such a poor rebounding team. I wanted us to, everything that we do to be revolved around the way we view going to get the ball, how important it is. And then this is just a couple quick actions that we run, but anybody can run them. Anybody can run them, and then we would be. I like this one because he would be back when we have our three crashers coming out of that play. Okay, so then last thing I'm going to show you. I know I'm showing a lot of drills, and I
No,
apologize.
coach, keep going. We love this.
Then I want to put it all together, right? Now you've got to put it all together. Do they understand what's a clean rebound, what's a contested rebound, or a delayed break? What is it? How do you do it? So we do this drill called Florida rebounding. This is a Kent State drill that they do. And so we do Florida rebounding. A lot of people do war, but this is our version of it. So everybody touches the coach and it becomes closeouts. The first guy closes out to the top slot. Second guy closes out to the corner. I have a ball in the basket. Third man closes out to the block. Fourth man gets there and the fifth, I'll throw it to somebody and they have to shoot it. All right, so now it starts the beginning of our transition defense. This one is wrong. The guy in the top slot should be going back. That's a strong side corner three. You're least likely to get it. We're more likely to get it from one of those three. Go back. That's our safety. But now we're judging, okay, is it a clean rebound by a guard? That means we should be making 7 second plays. We should be sprinting our lanes, making a play. Or is it a delayed rebound? Now we should be running one of our actions. So it's a live drill. And then we put guys in all spots. So if you started one spot, you'll be shuffling all over. So we'll do it with five possessions each. So everybody gets a spot. And then we do it. So there's the shot. Everybody's fighting for the rebound. That's a clean guard rebound. We now know, okay, shoot, we got to get, and we did a poor job on this clip, but we need to get as wide as we can get, as early as we can get. And this is our two guard who gets the rebound. And everybody else has got to be going a little bit wider, a little bit wider, a little bit wider. I don't even care if we're three on a side, but we are looking weak side. And because we look weak side, we get easy post up and we play. And then from there, which we don't have in yet, we would have our post cutting, right? We'd have our post cutting aspect of offense. So it's a game-like transition drill, not like the baseline touch, which is a little scripted. I don't know where the rebound's going. I don't know who's getting the rebound. And we need to determine on offense. Is this a play where we should try to be getting 7 seconds, or is this a play we should be using delayed break? And based on who gets it.
I love it, coach, because essentially you're taking what was traditionally, say, this kind of scripted or this is half-court drill, and you're basically saying we're drilled to live. There's a component that you can emphasize rebounding, but then we're playing live, and it's beautiful. And
And I
it's
can throw it to anybody. So the shot's coming from anywhere. So you have to identify, I'm opposite. I'm crashing. I'm the point guard. I'm still crashing here. So that's why we do it, is because I can spray the ball to anybody. Because in a game, you don't know where the shot's coming from. A lot of teams do the war drill, which is amazing. It's a Michigan State staple, and that's why they're one of the best rebounding teams in the history of the game. But it's always like the coach shooting the ball in the middle of the court. That's not always the case. We're not a great rebounding team. So they are. I need our guys to understand when and how to go get it, offensively and defensively. So if I'm on defense and I know I'm on the weak side, I better crack. I better go get this ball. And I think I'm trying to get the mindset first and then keep working on the toughness and the grind out of rebounding. So I think that's why I think this drill works for us. And I think that's it's and it's and they actually like it. They don't like running around in circles, closing out to a million guys, but they like the action part
They
because
like
they
to
have
play live. They know
anybody
they'll do the
can
drill because
use
they
the
know they're
ball.
going to play live.
No question. No question. No question. So
So
that's,
fun.
in a nutshell, like kind of the philosophy and how we implement just that part of it. And I alluded to a little bit on made baskets. That's my job. We'll probably run a set at that point. We're not trying to make people guess on when you're getting back. We want to run something now. And that's where I have to be as creative as I can be in understanding our personnel and what they do well and put them in as creative positions as I can. That's the fun for me. Now, you asked me why I got back. I love that part of it. I love stealing ideas from other people, putting into something that we do, a concept I like, or something that I think is difficult to guard, and putting it into the personnel. Does it fit our personnel or not? Not, I really love this action. But it really doesn't fit what we do. It's who on my team, okay, I love the way they got space for this guy, and that'd be perfect for one of our players. And that's how I will do it like that. I've done it like that for a long time. That's how I love to do it. You just got to have players who buy into it. It's a lot of understanding here, but in reality, it's not. It's like everybody else that, you have to sell them on the way you play.
You're giving them some structure, right? Some principles of play, but then you're letting them be conceptual out of that. So they have some structured, unstructured, and then they get a chance to play. And I imagine again, like especially you referenced like new players come into your program every year, they're gonna love this because to a certain extent, you're freeing some of them up as well, aren't you? From running structure to saying, hey, go be the best version of yourself.
I think so. And I think a lot of that's what people say. People always ask when you're recruiting or whatever, how do you guys play? These are the DNA. If you can't do the DNA, if you can't make decisions, if you can't understand the importance of putting pressure on the rim and you don't want to go to the offensive board, it doesn't make a difference how we play. Because those things have to be involved in everything that we do. And that's why I wanted the early drills to just be like that. Let's build this first. And let them know, hey, this is what you're being judged on. You're being judged on this, not whether or not you made the shot, but did you make the right play for us? Do we consider that a good play? And I think if we do that, then everybody will slowly get better and give us at least an opportunity.
Talk to us about not overcoaching, because one of the values of playing this way and practicing this way is that you're not overcoaching it to a certain extent, but they still have guidelines to be able to play.
I think you gotta, I think all coaches struggle with it, and I struggle with it, of you have to let them play through some things. I think you can't stop. I try not to stop the middle of a play. Because there's also times, this is a Billy Wazinski term, we love it. There's also possessions that have to be trashed to treasure. You might have done three things wrong in that possession, and I could have stopped it as the coach three times, but somebody made some good play at the end, and we got a great shot or scored. It's not always going to be perfect. So I'm getting better at it, stopping the urge of stopping the play the minute I see something wrong and correcting it after the fact and let the play continue. Let the play, because I think that's what's going to happen in the game a little bit too, right? I can't stop it. So they're going to have to figure it out. And I might have to tell somebody on the way down, hey, whatever. You know what I mean? Like you're missing the read, or that was a one more. But the game doesn't stop, and I'm trying to coach that way. The other one thing I picked up that I really is we'll have specific huddles, 30-second huddles, players only. One of my assistant coaches can sit in there, he can't say anything. and they'll have 30 seconds in between. So if we're playing Florida rebound after three possessions, 30 second huddle, get your team together, fix whatever you need to fix as a group, and let's go back at it again. Because I again, when you have so many new players, I need to figure out who the voices are, what are they saying, are they understanding it, and it just gives them a little more camaraderie, a little more ownership of kind of what we're doing. I think that's another way to handle overcoaching is let them coach sometimes, and
I
then.
love that, Coach. Can you talk about that a little bit more and connect it for us? Just because I think this is one of the most important things you can do as a coach, and it doesn't take away from intensity. It actually helps build it, right? Because players feel more invested and involved.
I think you're right. I think it's sometimes you got to let them, you got to let them handle it, and you got to let them figure out, okay, hey man, I'm open on this role. You got to look at me. They're trapping you. I think to me, there's a term I use with our players all the time now, is everybody wants the players to talk, right? We're all yelling, talk, communicate, talk. I don't ever use it. Communicate with your teammates. Talk to your teammates. So if I'm on defense and I'm in the gap, you have to use his name. I'm in the gap, Chris. I'm in the gap, Chris. You're not talking to talk, you're talking to a teammate. So same thing, that's what should happen in those little huddles. And then we all know that young players that communicating is not easy for them. It's not easy for any young player that we're in a world that lives on their phones, but give them that 30 seconds. Give them that 30 second huddle. Let's see if they can fix it. Because they're going to have to do that during the game. We are constantly, all of us are yelling, huddle up, huddle up. What are they saying? Have they ever huddled up?
And they're
And
getting to
let's make sure that
practice
they're
it,
huddling
right?
up. Yeah, practice it. Practice it. Somebody will say something. Could it be wrong? I don't even care. As long as we're saying something that's constructive basketball.
So when I get my teams to huddle up like this, I just want to connect a little bit for the audience. Sometimes I'll give them a very specific problem to discuss. Hey, we need to fix this specific thing. Come up with an idea. Boom. And then sometimes it'll be, hey, listen, we're going to be in this situation. Decide what you're going to do initially as the initial point of attack. So there's different ways to be able to get them to think somewhat like a coach and in terms of trying to figure it out for each other. Or is there anything specific else that you do in
No,
those
I think
ways?
you're right. I think it, and it also it connects the way we play, because if I grab the rebound and it's a delayed break, I'm calling the action. I might be the three man. I'm calling the action. This is what I want. Some guys might want to ghost and get in the post. Some guys might want to come off a twist or elbow hit, whatever it is. I'm calling the action. So it's not just one guy. It's not just the point guard. And obviously we'll try to echo it. So if whatever he calls, the other four guys have to call it. And so that's a big 5-on-0 concept for us. I mean, everybody, a lot of people do it. It's a great concept.
I could have asked the question at the end, and probably the answer would have been obvious, which is you just love coaching. You
I
love
do.
basketball.
Yeah, I love it. I love teaching it. I love being around it. I love players. I love players getting better, even through good or bad times. It's not, I'm in for into it now because I love it. I'm 61 years old, and I'm fortunate enough to be able to do this 21 years and still coach a team and still have the energy and enthusiasm every day. Do these type of things. I could listen to these people and people talk and coach, and please, anybody that wants to reach out to me, I have all of our stuff on video. I'll send it to you. I love sharing anything that I have or somebody that might want or talk basketball with anybody. I just love it. I've loved it my whole life, and I'm too old to change. And as my wife says, I don't have the ability to do anything else anyway. I might as well keep going.
We're grateful for you and we're grateful for this and all the sharing. And this will be another thing that coaches, if you listen to the podcast, that's awesome. But you need to go to YouTube and watch this video of the podcast because Coach connected so many things with the video for us that is just going to be able to be applicable right away to your coaching. And Jim, man, I appreciate it so much. Thanks so much for
Well,
sharing.
thank you for inviting me. You do an amazing job. These are awesome. These are great for all coaches at every level. I wish they were around when I was a younger coach. I love it.
Hey,
Thank
Coach, I
you.
referenced it, so let's talk about it quickly. I worked John Beilein's camp at Canisius. That goes back how far my connection to Canisius,
Oh,
Mike
God.
McDonald, some different people involved there, but it's a pretty cool place, isn't it?
It is a cool place, and it's a great school. My son goes here. My son's a freshman walk on our team. It's a small school, but people are very connected. It's great. It's a good place for me to be. And like I said, Mike, hopefully we can continue to improve.
Love it. Thanks, Coach.
Okay. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate you, man.